Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, enjoy the show.
Everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and we are currently reporting on our experience at PAX Unplugged in 2019, which was our first PAX Unplugged here in Philadelphia.
Yep.
So I came down from New York, and Paul came down from Boston.
Yeah, so it's Sunday here. It's a little quieter, actually, than it has been before. Things are definitely winding down, I would say. But you can certainly hear there's still quite a roar of a crowd behind us here in the main expo hall.
Right. Saturday was crazy. So Saturday, they had tens of thousands of people lined all around multiple city blocks and winding back and forth in order to get in.
Yeah.
Here on Sunday, that is not happening, so it's a little different. So
I think PAX is kind of known for lines, but also that the lines move pretty fast, I would say. I don't feel like that we were ever, like, really sitting there waiting for, or felt like we were in an unmoving line. Never felt like that.
Right. Yeah, totally true. Yesterday, I never stopped as much hiking as I did. I never stopped in the lines to get around.
Yeah.
So they do a pretty good job with that.
Yeah.
So we're currently in the main expo hall here at the Philadelphia Convention Center, and I actually did some math earlier. I'm pretty sure this one room holds a maximum capacity of 35,000 people, possibly. And yesterday on Saturday, all these tables behind us were currently in the free tabletop play. We're all full through the afternoon. Not quite so much today, but probably, I mean, I don't go to these huge events. This is probably I feel like this is the biggest single room I've ever been in my life.
I feel like, for me, it's comparable, I would say, to PAX East, I think, maybe a little bit bigger.
Gotcha.
In terms of people, anecdotally, I've heard that this is about the same size as, say, Gen Con is these days, in terms of numbers of people.
Yeah.
But I feel like Gen Con, you really feel the crush because it's a smaller venue.
Gotcha.
So there's a lot, it feels crowded, whereas this space is so enormous.
Yeah.
Even with 50,000 people wandering around, you still feel like you can get around and you can navigate. And yet it's all in one building, so you don't feel like you have to, like, wander around the city looking for where your next event is. It's definitely, it's all right here.
Right. I feel like it's a really nice location. I'm impressed by how, to me, enormous the halls and the hallways are.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna plan on doing quite a bit of walking. I'm fine with that. So I could always find my way around pretty well. And I think it's a pretty nice space, actually.
Yeah. So what have you enjoyed most about the convention, Dan?
Okay, so, well, running games with, playing in games with you has been
awesome.
Has been the high point.
Great.
So we ran at least one other boss fight game where Paul's the official DM and I'm running the bad guys. And boy, I think that works well. And I think the players were really interested and excited at the end to see how that ran. And I think that comes off as a really nice event, honestly.
Yeah, we ran that yesterday morning. And that, I think, is one of two games, really, I got to run here. I ran that, and then I ran a fifth edition excerpt from my DM's Guild publication, R.A. Salvatore Presents The Vile Crypt of the Reawakened Sisterhood. I really need, like, a nickname for that, because that's such a mouthful.
I'm starting to just call it Vile Crypt.
Vile
is what
Crypt.
I'm calling it. But.
Yeah, so we ran Vile Crypt, I ran Vile Crypt, which was pretty good. Had a good group of players. Dan actually played?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I did.
So that was fun.
I did. And I kind of play. I know at least one version of it, so I didn't give any strategic exploration advice, and then I just did the best I could.
Right. More there for tactical support than strategy.
Correct.
Yeah, I think it went pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people like that a lot.
Yeah. Now, the organization of RPGs here is a little weird. It's different from other conventions I've been to, certainly, where there's a pre-reg pass where GMs first list their games and then players come in and obtain tickets. I was going to say purchase, but actually most of the conventions I go to, the purchase price is zero.
Right.
But you still have to go through this process where you put tickets in a cart and you checkout, and et cetera.
Right.
Here at PAX, it's all on the fly. Like, the morning of, we would go down to the RPG room and literally just dictate to a person sitting at a computer what we wanted to run, and they would write it out on a sheet, a sign-up sheet, and put that at a table, and maybe people would come and sign up for it.
Right. And we're talking, like, maybe the hour or two before we were planning on running the event.
Right. So, officially, no events run before 10. The convention hall opens at 8, so you can get in and do that kind of logistical stuff.
Right.
But from what I heard yesterday talking to them, so I went in to sign up to run some games.
Right.
And they had a huge line of people waiting to, like, just peruse through the games and sign up to play stuff.
That'd be Saturday morning.
That was Saturday morning, right. Yeah. And that was at, like, I don't know, 10-ish.
Yeah.
And I was, from what I heard, that line persisted all the way till about noon of people just waiting in line to go in and sign up for games.
And what they're doing there is they're two or three people at a time perusing the 30 sheets of paper about what game they want to feel like they want to sign up for in the net.
You know, yeah, it's going to
happen in about 2 hours or
it's
so.
It's a little odd. I mean, I suppose it has the benefit of, like, you're really certain that game's going to go off, right? Because you don't have to worry about, like, the GM's not showing because the GM's there.
But I saw people come in and say the DM did not show up for at least one event.
Yeah,
still is not a silver bullet for that.
Well, there you go. On the flip side, I tried to sign up to run an evening game, and I didn't do that until like 4 or 5 p.m., and I was going to run it at 6.
Yeah.
And by then, the line was gone, and I realized my mistake later that because I wasn't signing up to run the game when the crowd was there, that no one signed up for it, and so I didn't get any players.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what PAX Unplugged here. So their forte is obviously not freeform role-playing games.
That's true. It's really more about cardboard, right? About board games.
That's
what we're seeing behind us, right? Is just massive free play board games. I know a lot of folks come for the game library. So there's there's this big game library where you can just peruse games that they have available. You can borrow one with your group of friends, go sit down, play it, return it, go borrow another one. And from what someone told me, because there's this also big exhibitor area where they're selling games,
which is basically right behind us. Yeah. You're looking at it there.
Yep. You might go there and just buy a game and sit down and play it.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of those exhibitors who are looking to sell new games, especially new games that just came out, will drop a copy or two at the game's library so you can go check it out and play it with your friends first.
That's nice.
And then decide whether or not you want to buy it.
That's nice. And then they also have a lot of, all through the weekend, they have, you know, panels going on. People talking industry stuff.
I was really surprised, actually. I was not expecting to go to a bunch of panels. I think we ended up at what, three of them?
Yep.
And they were all really good. I honestly, like, every one of them, I felt like I was really happy to be there and learn some interesting stuff.
Right. And some of it was writing games. Some of it was streaming games.
Yep.
People who were experienced with any of those things. Last night, and we went and saw the live play of Acquisitions Incorporated, which I basically knew nothing about going in. So huge number of people there, probably at least 1,000. I think that's about right. Probably.
It was at least. Yeah, okay. It was packed. It was a very large auditorium that was packed full.
Right.
We weren't even able to sit next to each other. We had to just grab random seats.
Right. And so whatever snarky comments we had, we were texting to each other. Interesting for me to see that. That's a very, I'll just say, that's a very different way of playing D&D. The pacing and the tone is very different. And I guess I'm glad to see that, because there's a lot of tonal pacing issues that in my entire life I never would have thought about running a game like that.
It's funny. Afterwards, we went back to the hotel, and I kind of forced Dan to watch a couple of little clips from Critical Role just to get a different perspective, because even those two, being sort of big fish in the streaming arena, I think are very different.
Right.
So that was really interesting, I think, to see that.
With Acquisitions Incorporated, I almost would go, this is more like a D&D themed TV show. Except that you actually do have the lead designer of D&D actually running it. So, you've got the official imprint that this counts as a D&D game. So I guess I can't argue with that. And I got to say, Robert is actually, for a guy who made his mark writing, is way better performer on stage than I would have guessed going into it. His enunciation and his vocalizations are
Now, I haven't watched a lot of Acquisitions Incorporated, so I'm possibly they're even more hyper aware of the fact that they have an audience when they're at an event like this, where there is literally a massive auditorium of people watching them. I don't know. But yeah, it definitely seems much more performative than, say, again, even Critical Role, which is kind of performative, right? Like, they're making skill checks. There's some combat roles going on. Pacing is really slow, and it seems much more about the interactions of the players and doing character play.
And they're clearly, everybody's clearly giving space for maybe a 15-minute dialogue between two characters, and nobody jumps in to interrupt that, and everybody knows this is a 15-minute dialogue between these two characters kind of over and over again.
So Dan mentioned it was kind of funny that there was a moment where one character had leaped off of a raised platform, leaped to make an attack, and by the time his turn came around again and he's interacting with the DM, he had forgotten that he was still midair in the middle of this parabolic arc of his leap, and because it was like real time, like 30 minutes later, and it was totally understandable that he would forget. But how the heck does one jump take that long?
Right. That's why to me, I would have you know, pacing's pretty important. I would have I would have done differently.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's interesting for me to see the other side of the point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nice thing about streaming D&D games these days is that it really is quite a wide range of stuff out there.
Which is your one. So there's that, and then they have, of course, officially organized role play. There's there's a large hall dedicated to Adventurers Guild, Pathfinder.
Yep.
They have organized tournaments for Magic the Gathering and collectible card games. So clearly, the people that come here, they probably, as you were saying this morning, they probably find their particular niche. And there's people that probably go to all panels and then are surprised to find out that there's any tabletop games.
Yeah.
And there's people that only do tabletop games and are surprised that anybody goes to panels or role-playing.
Yep. I mean, I have one friend here who's strictly in the miniatures hall all the whole time. He says he never leaves the miniatures hall.
Right.
And I have another friend who's here to see the board games, and he's buying board games and playing in the game library. And I knew, like, I talked to him about RPGs. He's like, he plays RPGs, but he's like, I don't come to PAX Unplugged for that.
Gotcha.
And then I said, and we were talking about what we were doing, and I said, also, I've enjoyed some of the panels. And he said, I've never done any of the panels either.
Right.
Like, he's just doing the board games.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff here. There's something for everyone, really, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And certainly you can fill up your whole weekend with any one of those things easily.
Yeah. Although a little tough to fill up your weekend with RPGs, as we found, because the organization is so
With freeform RPGs, that was a bit of a challenge that we ran into.
And I think they're aware of it. Most of the enforcers I talked to, those are the I can't call them volunteers because they're paid. But they're the staff here, the enforcers who make all the things happen. I was talking to some of them, and they all are kind of in a similar mind frame of like, this could be done better. Maybe we'll experiment with other ways to do stuff.
Right.
In fact, I think this year is the first time they actually had, there was a thread on RPG Geek where they did some pre-organization of some game. So if you were a DM, you could go and post what your game description was, and then people could respond in that thread and pre-sign up. So that possibly by the time you arrived at PAX, you already had a full slate and you would just go to your table and play. I don't know how that turned out, if that was a big success or not. I'd be really curious to hear from folks who either had successes or failures with
it.
Like, how did that go?
So and not fully synthesized with the rest of the process either. So from what we've heard, there was like one staff member who came up with this I'm going to try it idea.
Yeah.
So we certainly didn't know about that before we came here.
I was dimly aware of it, but I also was like, I knew so little about PAX Unplugged, I thought, I'm not going to accidentally fill my whole slate with this one thing that maybe turns out to be 10% of the convention. I want to see it all.
Right. Agreed.
So I kind of ignored it. Though I think if I was going to recommend to someone who did want to come to PAX Unplugged and did want to play a bunch of RPGs, I would definitely recommend checking out that page.
Okay.
Like, that's probably a good way to fill up to make sure that you get into some good games.
Okay. If anybody has more experience or confidence about that, we're slightly debating that this morning about which of the two entry paths to the freeform RPGs, what seems to be traditional write it out on paper the morning of and have people sign up versus the web technique that they're experimenting with this year. So if you have confidence that one or the other is better, please tell us, because we're a little bit wondering about that ourselves at the moment.
Yeah, I'm super curious about the weird edge case of what if I list a game and I get, you know, I'm looking for four or six players and I get two or three.
Yeah.
Then what? Do they print out a thing for people to fill out the rest?
Yeah.
Are the original three already got spots? How does that work? I'm really curious about that.
I'm pretty, at the moment, I'm 80% guessing that there is no synchronization between the two sides.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm guessing it's that they don't have a way of half and half.
Yeah. So maybe you just say, well, it didn't work on the forums.
Right.
I guess I go relist it as a sign up.
Right.
And,
or
you
might have to call
one.
Your own number and like print out your own sheet with three names and then and then slap it down on the table yourself, maybe.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Definitely not what I'm used to.
Right.
You know, definitely had, you know, unfortunately, I attempted to run four games and two of them actually got off the ground.
Yes.
I've definitely learned a lot of lessons here.
Right.
I don't think that I can say anything about the games, right? Or like I would hesitate to blame the games or my own reputation or anything like that.
Right.
I think
silly
logistical choices I made that I realized in retrospect were perhaps not wise.
Right. I guess we'll also say, I mean, you know, so is there a large old school component here? Certainly not.
No, right. I wouldn't say so.
Right.
I mean, now we did see just this morning, next to our sheet was another guy who was running basic D&D.
Right.
So there's some,
right,
but it's not organized in any way.
Right.
And I guess we should mention that there are groups who come in. So while as an individual DM, you cannot pre-register a game with PAX.
Right.
If you have a club or a large group and you say, we want to hold room for a slot, we're going to run a slate of games, you can do that.
Right.
So
a room, that's going to be like how many tables?
Like a dozen, maybe?
Right.
Yeah. So for example, last night, Saturday night, was Savage Saturday, and the local Savage Worlds group tried to coordinate a whole bunch of DMs to come in and run Savage Worlds games.
Yeah.
And then they had their own sign-up sheets and their own thing, and they did their own recruitment and whatever. And now the interesting thing about that, I think, is that then shows up in the schedule as an official event, Savage Saturday, which you can pre-register for as an attendee.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So they have some inkling of, well, we're going to have X number of people at Savage Saturday.
Yeah.
What specific Savage Worlds games are those people going to play? Who knows?
Right.
Right?
Yep. Exactly.
And likewise, I think I saw Chaosium do that with Cthulhu.
Right.
And then obviously Adventures League and Pathfinder are also here in force and do a similar kind of style of thing.
Right.
So if you're looking into that kind of organized play with a large group, that's certainly here.
Right. And I think we can understand, so it being different than the gaming conventions that we're used to, I think we can understand philosophically how that came to be, because this is a spin-off of the other PAX events,
which
are probably more focused on the panel-y type stuff.
And really the video game industry.
Right.
Right. Ultimately they're serving video games, not board games.
Right.
My understanding is, and I've been to PAX East, there's always like an area for tabletop games and paper games and whatnot.
Yep.
And that just became so popular at the various PAXes that they eventually spun it off into its own convention.
Right. So they have a tradition in, you know, organizationally of not doing ticketing, not doing advanced tickets, first come, first serve, generally. They've got a whole process for like waiting lines, which is actually better organized than anything I've ever seen before, actually.
Yeah.
So their philosophy is generally first come, first serve. You show up, you get in. Lots and lots of stuff are based on that. And as a result, they don't have a way the standard pre-registration for role-playing.
From what I understand, I have a friend who's an enforcer who's given me some insight into this, that a couple of philosophical stances they took at the very beginning of even forming these conventions.
Yeah.
One of which is, there's one price. You get a badge, your badge gets you access to everything. End of story. Right?
But that's actually not the case here. You gotta pay for the big name.
Well, the outliers, I think, are the things where there are extra materials that need to be paid for, that need funding, right?
Okay.
So I think there is, you're right. There are things that do potentially have an extra fee.
Yeah.
But I think the root philosophy there is that there's no VIP, there's no, anybody's badge is sufficient. There's no badge levels, right? There's one kind of badge.
There you go.
It, gets you access to everything,
true,
allegedly.
Yeah. Which I like.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
You know,
sorry, go on.
They're thoughtful about, access for people with special medical needs. Every single hall and every single enforcer is aware of that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they've gone through specifically in this convention center and taped up gender identifiers in the bathrooms in a lot of places to make them gender neutral.
Yeah.
So kudos to them. That's clearly extra work they were doing for that. So that was very mindful.
And in general, I would say one thing that PAX really gets right is they really train their enforcers very well.
Yeah.
They're very good at crowd management.
Yeah.
They're all trained to be very friendly and approachable.
Yeah.
Anytime they've had a special request, they're immediately ready to help.
Yeah.
To the point of, in one case, I had my information taken and eventually had a text chain going between me and the head of RPGs and the head of Savage Saturday because I was trying to last minute jump in on that.
Yeah.
And as a GM, right? And they were like just trying to organize that to help us get together.
Yeah.
And they were super friendly, super nice, and huge kudos to them for, you know, definitely if you're in PAX, if you're at a PAX and you're not sure what's going on, you need help, whether it's to find the bathroom or advice on what to do, any enforcer is easily identifiable and is definitely going to help you out.
Yeah, had 100% good interactions with the staff here. They're very impressive and very friendly and very interested in helping you out.
And that comes to another philosophical point of their organization that I've heard, is that part of the reason the organization is so unusual here is that they try to delegate responsibility down.
I see that.
Right? So the top level organizers of PAX, they have no idea how RPGs work. They have an RPG manager for that.
Yeah.
The RPG manager, in turn, empowers their enforcers to do stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Which is why you have one enforcer who said, I'm going to try starting a forum thread and see if we can do that.
I see that.
So I don't know. Maybe that will pay out in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody's going to come up with some brilliant idea that makes things easier and better.
Yep. I see that.
Pragmatically, here's my advice to you, though. If you want to come to PAX Unplugged and you want to run games, I would say think out which games, or specifically RPGs.
Yeah.
Think out which ones you want to run.
Yeah.
Be prepared with, like, either a write-up, like, especially if you can write down on a piece of paper the description, what the system is, how many players you want, and then go into the info session, the info area, the info room, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Go down there each early in the morning, like between 8 and 9.
Yes.
Before 10, certainly before 10. Get in there early and just give them the games you want to run that day.
Right.
Don't give them tomorrow's games.
Right.
Unfortunately,
there was a glitch with that.
We had a glitch with that where one of our games, they forgot to put the sheet out.
Yep.
So we had to go in and last minute try to round up people.
Yep.
Just give them today's games while.
Right.
And the important thing is, the reason to do that is because around 10 a.m. is when the big line forms, and there's a crowd there who all are interested in playing games.
Yep.
And you want that crowd to see your game and to sign up.
Yeah. So if you're, and it hits me a little bit more because I tend to be a bit of a night owl. So if you're going to run games and you're using the traditional RPG sign up, you got to commit to being here by. I mean, because of the line on Saturday, you frankly have to commit to being at the place by 8.
Right.
You
got
to plan to be at 8. If then there's a line, then you're in. Your paper's on the table at 9, and there's an hour and a half for people to sign up. So you got to plan to be here at 8.
Certainly, getting in the morning on Saturday, you expect to wait in a long line.
Right.
Just to get in the building.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, again, well-run as it could be for the... I think when everybody first comes to the block and sees it, everybody lets out an obscenity.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're moving the whole time, so that's way, way better than I would have expected when I first saw it.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
So overall organization, well-run, I would say. Overall organization, well-run. The RPG minority niche, the free-form RPG minority niche... still undergoing evolution.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely keep doing some experiments, I think, and they'll hopefully figure it out.
Right.
But I would say, you know, I certainly came to this my first year I go to any convention, I definitely try to come with as an open mind as I can of, like, this is the exploratory mission, I'm going to see what this convention's like, I'm going to figure out how it ticks, and next year, the second year, that's when I'm going to hit it and get everything I want out of it.
Which seems like a very smart strategy to me, because that is exactly what was necessary this time. I would say anything else would have been frustrating.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I guess I'll also point out that because of the size, I'm sure, and this is really like the biggest tabletop specific convention on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to have this, to be honest, because I remember the days when the nearest big convention to me was Gen Con, right?
So
got to go to Wisconsin.
Right.
So there's a strong element of networking going on here.
Yeah.
I met a lot of interesting people, especially as a creator. So if you're writing stuff for DriveThruRPG or DM's Guild, or if you're doing a stream and you want to just sort of meet and network with other people who do those things as well, this is a great place to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're all here and very approachable. Specifically, I went to a DM's Guild meetup on Saturday morning, which wasn't even, was at a coffee house near the convention center, organized on the fly by members of DM's Guild. Met a bunch of fellow authors there, got a huge amount of incredibly good advice from folks who happen to work at DriveThru.
Great.
Really, really great. So if you're looking to do that kind of networking as a creator, you really should come to PAX Unplugged.
That sounds great. I didn't go to that, but that did sound like a very rewarding, great event.
It was really, honestly, for me, it was a major highlight of the trip. I was really excited to meet a lot of those people and to get some really like useful, practical advice, which was really great.
Yep, that's great. And then the panels, there were also people that were running Twitch and things like that were speaking about certain things that seemed helpful to us there as well.
Yep.
So that was good. I think that was good for us to hear.
Yeah. Cool. So how do you think this show will impact the future of Wandering DMs?
Oh, interesting. Well, I think I'm going to know what the other end of the continuum is for people running streaming games, I guess, because I didn't have, that's very much clarified in my head what that looks like, and what a large fan base they have. I really don't think I would ever run a game like that. Would be very surprising to me, but at least I'll have in my head what makes us unique in this context better, I guess, or what slice of the market would be different for us, I guess, or what maybe people that are watching us are unique in a way compared to some of the large live streaming game streams. Was that coherent?
Was that
a coherent statement?
I mean, the subtext here sounds like, Dan, like maybe we're going to see a little more actual play live streaming on our channel.
We both want to do that, so we both are talking about. I do. I have a great desire to do that. I love running games. I think it's becoming clearer and clearer to me that that's the part of it that I really love and am happy with the most is actually running games live. So the more I can do that, the happier I get, frankly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I would love to do it as well.
Yeah.
It's something I've talked to various folks about doing and just can't seem to figure out the logistics of it. Definitely got some really great advice from other folks who do it here. I mean, no promises. I don't have anything specific planned.
Right.
But it's definitely something I'm looking into.
And I think that you've heard a couple of options
this weekend
that neither one of us would have come up with on our own, actually, as far as location, logistics, timing, duration, things like that, that I never would have thought of in advance.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for example, I heard some talk where that suggested perhaps that the ideal duration for an actual play, a regular, like, weekly actual play live stream is closer to the 2-hour mark rather than what's in my head a standard of being, like, 3 to 4 hours.
Right.
And that's actually, it's kind of interesting to me, both in terms of, like, well, how do I prepare material for that kind of time block, but also, like, no, with a lesser commitment of time, then maybe it's a little more doable.
Right. I see that.
Yeah. And I could see how the fans might want that, and I'd love to hear from you folks if you agree or disagree with this point. But I could understand how folks, maybe that makes it easier to catch up, right? Or it's a little easier to consume, right?
Yeah.
If it's only going to be an hour to 2 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, an hour, that seems crazy. Sure. I have to say, immediately retract that. I can't imagine an hour-long RPG stream.
Someone famous is planning one sub 2 hours. I mean, they're planning an hour
45
is what they're actually aiming for now.
Yep. So that's really interesting.
Never would have thought of that. I never would have thought. I mean, we run these action-packed. You run these action-packed boss fights.
Yeah.
That sometimes I'm the adversary in. That's 2 hours. But I never would have thought of that as a regular story building, you know, character building.
Well, I can say as a consumer of this kind of stuff, I have, typically I listen to the podcast rather than watch the video.
Right.
Typically I listen to that in my car while commuting.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I got a half an hour commute, so my ideal is a half hour show.
Yeah.
My next favorite is an hour show because then I get, you know, there and back again. I get through one episode.
Right. Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Then you're going to push out, okay, 2 hours? Okay, so 2 days worth of commuting is going to get me through one whole episode.
Yep, yep.
But yeah, like I really enjoy Fear of a Black Dragon for being, I think, around 45 minutes is kind of ideal for me to listen to over the course of one episode per commute.
Okay.
Totally specific to my situation and how long my commute is.
Yeah,
right?
It's interesting because we all have specific, and in my thing is I'm tending to watch stuff when I'm eating lunch. So we all have like a specific thing we're doing when we consume the media that dictates what's a good time for us, actually.
Right. But it does seem like something that can be blocked out into shorter increments is potentially good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Very curious to hear what you guys think. So please let us know in the comments, you know, if you're into watching streaming or listening to podcasts.
Yeah.
What do you think the ideal length is? I'd love to know.
Yeah, we're still debating that, so you could possibly push us in one direction or the other.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Fascinating. Are you coming again next year, Paul?
I don't know. Yep. Maybe. Yep. I would say I'm a strong maybe.
Right. Right.
It really, I think the thing is, for me, now knowing what I know, I would have to formulate a plan ahead of time of what I'm hoping to get out of this panel.
Right.
Right? What is it that I'm looking forward to? Is it the panels? Is it the networking? Am I, in 1 year from now, am I still doing that stuff? Or have I admitted defeat? I hope I'm still doing that stuff. And then I would love to come just for the networking aspect.
Right.
Am I hoping to run games? If so, do I have a plan for how I'm going to execute that in a way that gets better than 50% success?
Right, right.
Which I think I could do. I think at this point I'm now knowledgeable enough that I could fill more games.
Yeah, I agree. So what I'm hearing is standard waterfall model is the best of requirements first and then filling in the details. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think so.
There was Paul was gritting his teeth there when he said that. That was pretty good. For me, I mean, it's so close to New York. I mean, it's exactly one nap away on the bus for me. So it's so convenient. It would definitely be at least a strong contender.
Sorry, I'm keep checking my mic here because my thing keeps pulling. Sorry. Let's talk about travel for a second here.
Okay.
Because for me coming down from Boston, what immediately grabbed me was I could take the train.
Right.
Amtrak comes down here. It's about a 5.5 hour ride on a train, which is a little long, but the train is usually quite pleasant. And my idea was like, I can get a bunch of writing done. I can do some work sitting here on the train.
Yeah.
I had a terrible experience where my train got stuck in New Rochelle for 6 hours.
That's really bad.
So I was on a train for 11 total hours. And the kicker, the absolute thing that made me really sad about it is that in the last hour, I'm furiously tweeting because I'm just so bored. I had nothing better to do. So I'm furiously tweeting about it and about PAX. And I discover that there's at least half a dozen other folks going to PAX on the train in the same situation.
Yeah.
Man, we could have been. I could. You know how much D&D I could fit in 11 hours? Why weren't we doing that?
You know, either 3 or 6 episodes, depending on what your duration is.
Holy cow! And that's kind of honestly always been a fantasy of mine for Gen Con, which is totally infeasible because there's no good train routes there.
Right.
Have a game train, right? I would love to game on a train on the way to a gaming convention. That sounds to me like super fun. There's a little logistical, like, can you get in and steal one of the very few tables in the dining car in time?
Right,
maybe.
Right.
But it's still a fantasy of mine. If anyone is ever traveling to or from PAX Unplugged, between PAX Unplugged and Boston, and wants to try and, like, make a game train, I'm in. I want to do that. I would love to see that happen. I think it can't happen spontaneously. I think it has to be pre-planned.
I'm all unclear. Do you still go to Gen Con?
I haven't been in several years now. I haven't been in several years, honestly. The size of it and the space. So the funny thing is, the size, meaning the 50,000 people, is a pretty big convention. convention, and the physical space is small enough that, like, unlike PAX Unplugged, which I think is about the same number, it's crammed. Like, you feel like you're really shoulder to shoulder in these big crowds, and it starts to feel very crowded.
Right.
And they've filled that convention hall so much that now they've spilled out into the ballrooms of the surrounding hotels that people are staying at, which means potentially you've got a game in one hotel that ends, and then your next game is 10 minutes later at another hotel that's clear across, you know, many city blocks away, and you've got to run, and it's just, it's a nightmare.
That'd be super rough.
I mean, that's one thing I would definitely say, kudos to PAX Unplugged for picking this location.
Yeah.
If there are 50,000 people here, it doesn't feel like I'm swamped by a giant crowd and can't move.
Correct.
Right? It's very open, very easy to navigate.
Correct.
And yet, it's all in one-ish building. I mean, the funny thing is we did discover at one point that we had accidentally crossed the street without leaving the building.
Yeah.
That was a little weird experience.
It's so large that there's a skywalk that's too large for you to realize you're on a skywalk.
Yeah.
It's so enormous.
It's so big, you just feel like you're still in the same building, and you're like, oh, wait, I'm somehow across the street now?
Right. It covers at least three blocks, does it? It covers at least...
We did, at one point, end up going down some stairs on the first floor, and then realizing we could not get back to where we wanted to be without going back upstairs and across and down again.
Right.
Or going outside, but you don't want to go outside because then you got to pass through security again.
Right.
That's another interesting thing about PAX Unplugged, right, is that they do have fairly strict security, which is why you have the long line to get in, is that you're passing through metal detectors and they're looking through your bags, which is enough of a hassle, especially if you're lugging a giant case of miniatures like I am. It's enough of a hassle that you really kind of don't want to leave the convention center if you can get away with it.
Right. I will never get accustomed to security checks like this, but it was as low as pain-free as that can be, that having been said.
I mean, it wasn't terrible, right? It was totally totally reasonable, I think, but ultimately it's slow, right? Like, it's slower than just walking in the building.
But you know what else? I will say that, you know, I've seen a video of Gen Con this year of the doors are open and then there's just this, slightly perilous crowd crush of thousands of people all funneling through this one area.
Yep.
That never, ever, ever happens here.
No.
That never, ever happens here.
It's funny. I think when we came in on Friday morning, there's a line to get into the building, and we fall back to the end of the line, and we discover it's come into this area where there's sort of like a larger, open, empty cement area. There's no building there, and the line just starts to sneak back and forth to fill up that space.
Right.
And I remember you saying, like, did they, like, self-organize into this snake? And the answer is no. Like, the enforcers know what they're doing, and they got in there, and they organized people into that pattern.
Right, right. And it's interesting because there's no cones, there's no ropes. They're just one single person, adding to the sixth level of the snake to fill up, to space fill the space.
Yeah.
So it was very well done. I will say the convention center with the up down thing, it reminds me, it's like a convention center designed by Dyson Locos. Right? We got up and down, now we're to play, we're on the same level, but you can't get back anymore.
We actually amusingly had that moment, right, of there's a map, but it's it doesn't really evoke the scale of the place you're in.
Right.
And it's not completely representational, right? There's no 10-foot squares on that map.
Correct.
And so we had some navigation errors. And I remember you saying to me, like, if there's one thing gaming should have trained me to do by now, it's follow a map.
Whenever I fail to follow a map correctly, I'm super, super disappointed with myself, because I really feel, what other skills do I have at this point?
Oh, man.
Yeah. So a nice place. Well chosen. Good location for us. Overall thing, well organized. Nice to get around.
Yeah.
And the role playing games were not 100% on our end, but the ones that we did were exciting, and the players had a good time, and were interested in hearing more.
If I can opine a little bit more about the organization of the RPGs, just to give them a little credit, right? The feeling it gives is much more one of a casual, like, I don't feel as anxious about getting to my game
True.
as I do at other conventions.
True.
Like, I'm on the hook and I go, oh, geez, I got to run this game. Like, it's more like, oh, yeah, what do I feel like doing today? Right. Maybe I'll run this game.
Right.
So, yeah, it does definitely give the whole experience, the overall experience, a more casual vibe.
And that can be good. That can be good. I felt relaxed almost all the weekend.
Yeah.
And it was a nice, it was a nice getaway for me.
Yeah. Anyway, any final thoughts on PAX before we sign off?
Glad I came.
Yeah.
Really glad I came. Glad that I came with your advice of this is an exploratory session.
Right.
I love the co-DMing with you. And it's interesting because, you know, we've, like in the distant past, we co-DM'd as actually we're both co-running the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't perfect. There were some missteps.
Right.
And actually this system of you're actually running the game and I'm just running tactically the bad guys is top notch. I give that 100%.
Yeah. You know, so we had a funny idea for a stream we could do of basically that game, that sort of boss fight game of, a two-hour session where a small group kicks in the door and fights a big boss monster,
right,
where I'm running the game and Dan's playing the boss.
Yeah.
And I think we were going to title it, Wandering DMs Versus.
or Paul and Dan Versus.
Paul and Dan Versus.
Paul and Dan Versus.
And of course, what you would have to do for a show like that is just every week have a different group of celebrity guests to play the characters. So if you're a celebrity and watching this and you think that's a great idea, reach out to us. I don't think we know quite enough celebrities. We could maybe pull off one or two sessions at most.
Well, that aside, it's a really action-packed event, right? And it's also the exact opposite of something like the show we saw last night. So, admittedly, it's not character-driven, and so you, at least of the convention thing, it's like action is happening, and it's all action all the time.
Yep.
And it at least it would be an interesting, you know, alternative niche.
Yeah.
You're certainly not developing characters. You're destroying characters.
You know what you could do? Sorry, now I'm spitballing off the top of my head. Here we go. Here's my idea for it. Is you rerun the same module, right? Because we heard, who was it?
Yes,
the name of
Keith Baker. Who created the Eberron setting for D&D, does a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, he was talking on a panel about how he took one adventure and ran and like traveled around the world and ran it like 60 times for different groups.
Which is great.
And one of the things he was so excited about was how every group approached it slightly differently.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my pitch for this, right?
Right.
Do the same thing. We run just that one scenario for as many different groups as we can.
Right.
And we make a little leaderboard, like a la, what's that show, that car show that the Brits have? Top Gear.
There you go.
Right? So on Top Gear, they always did this thing where they have a celebrity guest come in and run their race on their track in a shitty car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And they would time them. And it was a bit of a joke, right? Because, they were in a really, like, terrible, like, compact car or something.
Okay.
And yet they timed them and they kept a leaderboard of which celebrity was able to race on their track the fastest. So we could somehow figure out a scoring mechanism.
Yeah.
And then we can start rating our celebrity guests on how well they did in the boss fight.
Oh, that would be great.
That's the plan.
All right. That'd be great.
All right, we're doing this.
That's pure gold.
you watched it live. Here, the idea came out here live at PAX Unplugged. So again, if you're a celebrity, or hell, if you're a gaming group who wants to stream you attempting to beat Dan and Paul at the boss fight, get in touch.
We will do that. I'll give you a little slice of the action from yesterday, right? So there's an action whereby my main bad guy's been really brutally injured, and then the party wizard is casting magic missile and has to decide how many things to target at him.
Right.
And I turned to him and was like, look, I'm very injured. I'm very far down. I think one or two missiles will be, only one or two missiles will take me out, so you're better off using it at other things.
And I had the guy was ready to do it. I had to lean in and say, he's not your friend. He's not actually trying to help you. He wants you to fail at this.
And I was like, no, I am your friend. You should listen to me and you should trust me, is what I was saying. So there was...
he was so confused, that poor guy. It's important, I think. Maybe we need, like, specific uniforms or something to make
clear
that, like, I have a referee shirt and you have, like, devil horns on or something.
Right. Or at least, like, a red shirt.
A red
Warning shirt. Yeah, that's a good point. We should do that next time.
All right, yeah. There you go. We're going to get the shirts.
Great.
We're at least going to get the shirts when we run it at conventions.
Okay. Great.
Maybe I can have a whistle.
Of course you can have a whistle. Well, of course, now you have to have a whistle, boy.
Okay.
Just
this show has gone totally off the rails. wrapping it up. Any final thoughts on PAX Unplugged?
I'm really glad we came, and I'm so glad that they have this, and I agree with you. It's really great they have this on the East Coast. It's a wonderful resource.
Yeah, I definitely I can foresee coming again. It's a little hard for me to predict from a year from now why I'll want to come.
Yep.
But I feel like I probably will.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Oh,
did I just stop recording? No, I did not. Okay. So, no technical issues going on here. Everything's fine. if you had any particular experiences at PAX Unplugged that I'd love to hear from you, especially in terms of like the RPG organization, please get in touch, drop some comments here, or tell us about other conventions we should be attending. Is there one that we don't know about? Let us know. We'd love to check it out. Leave some comments for us.
Remember, we are going to be taking a break over the holidays here of 2019. So the next Wandering DM show is in January. And we will start releasing in the weekends to come, we'll start releasing our patron-only videos that we've made looking back at the one time that we did a marathon live stream game in 2019, as a matter of fact.
Right.
So we've recently been analyzing that of like what could we do differently in the future and what bits surprised us and things like that.
Yeah, it's a real behind the DM screen look at that entire live stream.
Exactly.
So if you'd love to have access to that, that's for patrons only. So please come check out our Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingdms. And you can get access to those videos. They'll be coming out about once a week starting next week.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget that you can also follow and subscribe and like us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch under the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. And we also have audio versions on our website, wanderingdms.com.
Right. So our show is available via podcast form on iTunes and Google Podcast and Spotify and Stitcher and a ton of other places. And if you know a place where we're not, let me know and I'll fix that. And if you are listening to us on one of those podcast delivery systems, please take a moment to give us a rating or review. That really actually helps us out quite a lot.
Great. Thank you for listening, and we will plan to see you again for season 2 of Wandering DMs in early 2020. And for more interesting discussions and places to go and people to see and guests to have, and we'll see you next year.
We'll see you then.